is JS Party, your weekly celebration of JavaScript and the web. The software world moves fast. Keep up the easy way with Changelog News, the only software newsletter that's also a podcast. Sign up today at changelog.com/news. Big thanks to our partners at Fly. Launch your app as close to your users as possible. Fly makes it easy. Learn how at fly.io. Okay, it's party time, y'all.
What's up, friends and party people? I'm here with my good friend over at Speakeasy, founding engineer George Hadar. Speakeasy is the complete platform for great API developer experience. They help you produce SDKs, Terraform providers, docs, and more. George, take me on a journey through this process. Help me understand exactly what it takes to generate an SDK for an API at the quality level required for good user experience, good dev experience.
The reality is the larger your API becomes, the more you want to support users that want to use your API. And to do that, your instinct will be to ship a library, a package, and what we've been calling an SDK. There's a lot of effort involved in taking an API that lives in the world and creating a piece of software that can talk to that API. Building SDKs by hand is a significant investment, and a lot of large companies might pour a lot of money into that effort to create something that's like approaches good developer experience. And then another group of a more growing group of companies will rely on tooling like code generators. And so they're very interested in, like, once you make the decision to use a code generator, you're kind of forfeiting some of your own opinions and what you think a good developer experience is, because you're going to delegate that to a code generator to give you an SDK that you think users will enjoy using.
So there's various open source tooling out there that can do a version of what you do. How much research have you all put into doing it at a quality level that is enterprise API ready?
A lot of the customers that we've spoken to didn't have that experience. So they went to code generators, they tried to point them at their APIs and tell them, give me an SDK, and the outcome wasn't great. Like, it didn't support some of the features in OpenAPI, or the code that it was generating was not idiomatic TypeScript. We didn't boldly think we're gonna solve this better than everyone else. The reality is that that's where we came in. We surveyed all the things that have happened in JavaScript over the last few years, all the incredible projects like Zod, for example, and the web platform APIs that are now like broadly supported, like the Fetch API, the Web Streams API. We kind of saw this and said, there's a great opportunity to mix all these together and create the best experience you can get out of a code generator for users.
Okay, so paint a picture. What's a good next step? What can people expect when they go to speakeasyapi.dev?
If you're coming across Speakeasy today and you want to use it, you will go through the onboarding flow, and at some point, you're going to give us an OpenAPI document. That's your description of your API, and we're going to take that document and turn it into an SDK of your choice. You're going to get to pick which language is your first language. That's the one you'll get for free. And at that point, you can publish that package for the world to use. That's going to be yours. It's you get to license that however you want, and then carry on from there. The way you iterate now is you keep changing your OpenAPI document. So as you develop your backend, you're going to produce alongside that the OpenAPI document with any updates over time and evolve that. And as you're evolving that, we're generating the SDKs and publishing them for you. And that also includes rich documentation that goes with them. So we're asking you to put a lot of effort just into describing your API, and we're going to do a lot of the heavy lifting that follows from that.
Okay, so as George mentioned, go to speakeasyapi.dev. You get your first SDK for free. So cool. Once again, speakeasyapi.dev.
Party people, I'm Jared, your internet friend, and today, I hope not to bore you, we'll be talking about the boring JavaScript stack with Kelvin Omerishone, which is maybe not a 9 out of 10 like I just did in pre-production, but maybe an 8 out of 10. Kelvin, welcome to JS Party.
Thank you, Jared. I'm really happy to be here. I'm a big fan of the show. So yeah, thank you for having me.
You bet. And for go ahead and land a 10 out of 10 on that last name so everybody knows how you actually say it.
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Kelvin Omerishone. It's really African, so I don't fault anyone for not knowing how to pronounce it. So that's why I go by the initials K-O-O online, because my last two names, it's a nightmare to pronounce.
K-O-O. I like it. Yeah. I like it. And you have a big banner on your Twitter/X profiles. Ship less JavaScript, the boring JS stack. Do you want to tell us about this project and what you're up to and why you think it's interesting?
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much. First of all, I started building the boring stack way before people now know it as the boring stack. So I started working on it as my answer to the very shiny but not so productive world of modern JavaScript full stack web development. So at the time, I was building a platform called salesguys.com. I still work on the platform. It's a place where I educate JavaScript developers to build full stack apps using the sales framework or whatnot. So at the time, I was building the app with like a sales API, right? And a Nuxt SPA, right? Which is like a Vue meta framework. So the promise I had from Node.js was like using JavaScript across the stack, one language makes everything really faster. But having to have the separation of concern with two repos, that's two code bases, double routing, because I have to route in Vue router, then I route in my API. And don't get me started with authentication nightmare, because you know how many people really invalidate their JWT really well. All right. So I was doubting the whole promise of SPAs. I was like, okay, yeah, this is good, right? And especially when they are loading spinners, when there is a page, for example, on salesguys.com, there's a courses page. The page is useless without the courses list. But with the current status quo, I will have to have like a loading spinner. Why do I need a loading spinner? Why can't the page just load with the courses? Because without the courses, there is no courses page. But that's the status quo of modern SPAs, right? So I got dissatisfied. So I started looking for alternative. And then I found Inertia.js, which is this thing that came out from the Laravel world, because of course so the maker of the tool, Jonathan Renick, had the same problem I have, which is like, I want to build modern SPAs, but I don't want a separate API. Can't my backend drive the SPA experience? And that's what the boring stack is all about. It's where you have this solid MVC, stable, predictable web framework, and then you can bring in your React, your Vue, as well as your pages. So you get the SPA experience, your routing is on the server, the data the page needs come with the page each time the users request the page, so there's no loading spinners at all. So nice. In a nutshell, that's what it is. There's other things that goes into it, but that's just what it is.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Cool. So you mentioned Salescasts is your site, and Sales.js is the Node framework. This goes way back. I mean, I remember Sales came out, was it 2011, 2012? I mean, this has been around for a long time.
Yeah, very boring and stable.
What's the history of that project, and who made it, and how is it maintained, and what? Tell us more about Sales, because I haven't heard about it much lately.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're going to be hearing more about it because of yours truly. So I found Sales when... So I came from a Laravel PHP background. So I can remember vividly one semester when I was in uni. So we had this break and I was like, you know what? I'm going to learn full stack web development with Laravel PHP. It was like my project for the break. So I learned PHP, I learned Laravel. I really loved it. But over time, I discovered that I liked JavaScript more. And with Node.js, there was no need to use any other language. I could just learn one language and use it across the stack. So at the time, Express was everyone's favorite. It still is in terms of like, you know, low level, you know, API stuff. But I wanted the same Laravel experience. So I looked around in the Node.js world. I found a couple. I tried a couple. I found Nest. I found Adonis. Then I found this little obscure thing, everybody deemed outdated thing called Sales. And I kind of liked it because it was just JavaScript. There were no magic. Everything was just JavaScript. It spoke to me. And I was like, you know what? I think I like this. I'll go with it. So at the time, I was a consultant on a project to build like their web service. And I picked sales for that project. And I was so fast in delivering everything. So because of that, I formed like a great love for the project. And then I started looking online and no one was talking about it. I was like, why is no one talking about it? And I saw like, okay, people think it's outdated. It's still at 1.x. And you know, and I was like, okay. Not if I can help it. So I started writing about it. I created salescast.com to teach it. I created a community, Salescast community on Discord to, you know, help people with the problems and all that. So I was doing this on my own. Then Mike McNeil, who is the creator of Sales, noticed the work I was doing. And over the years, we started talking. And fun fact, he actually pushed a gig one time my way, which was very lucrative in terms of money because these folks wanted to build like a sales-powered web app. So because he didn't have the time and everything, pushed it my way because of the work I've been doing. Then I also organized SalesConf. I've done it for 3 years. This will be the fourth year. And this will be the first ever physical one, which I'm excited about. And last year, SalesConf, Mike McNeil announced me as the lead maintainer. So I'm currently the lead maintainer of the project. People can have more trust because the project powers the Boring Stack and it powers two of my products already, salescast.com and Hackfish, which is one I just launched. And it may or may not have something to do with another secret project I'm working on, which I could name Project 50. So yeah, it's very, very much alive. People use it. Fun fact, Postman use it. Paystack, which is like the Stripe of Africa, use it as well. And I know a lot of companies who are picking it up, who have been using it for decades, even in Europe and elsewhere, even banks and airline. It's just being used and it's calm and it's boring. So people don't really talk about it much, but my job is to make sure that people talk about it much.
Okay. Yeah. I like it. So you found it, you liked it, it spoke to you. It was a small community. It was a long-standing, boring project, as you said, that didn't have much magic, but all the things that you need to build your projects, and you slowly started contributing, and eventually now you are lead maintainer of Sales.js. From which you build on top of for the Boring Stack, and you're building products on top of this. You mentioned Hagfish. Real quickly, mention what that is and what you're up to with that.
Yeah, so Hagfish.io is because, you know, right now I work full-time for myself. I don't have a 9-to-5 job. I'm a full-time indie hacker entrepreneur. And before now, I do a show called TKYT. So I have a lot of ways where I need invoices. And I also have a lot of ways where people send me invoices because I hire contractors from all over the place. So I always wanted a way to manage it. So Hagfish is my, I know there are other platforms out there, but it's the way I want to work in terms of like, you know, if I have to send invoices before, okay, I go to Google Docs, create the invoice in your doc, export as PDF, go to my email client, send emails, and then I don't know where the invoice is anymore. But with Hagfish, I get to see this one place where I get to send my invoices and manage them. And I automate the email in the sender. You can send emails, your invoices as emails. You're going to attach the PDF as well, which is very important. And I have so much plans for it, but for right now, it's just an invoice platform. And I've been using it. I use it a lot. People also send me invoices through the platform as well. And it's all built with the Boring Stack. So it's fun.
That's cool. So what's your primary income there? So you live in Nigeria, you are full-time indie hacker, making products, invoicing people. How do you make your living?
Yeah, so a couple of ways. Currently, the most lucrative way is the partnership I've had for Project 50. So online, I announced that I partnered with Sentry and also Render for the project. So they are partners in terms of like Sentry is the APM partner. Render is a company I've used for years for deployment. So all my products are deployed on Render. So it was really good for them to come on board for Project 50. They know what the project is, but the rest of the world don't until July 3rd because I'm trying to make it secret. So that has been very, very good in terms of like, you know, income. And the idea is because salescast.com, I sell courses there. So the idea is to grow that as well and also see how Project 50 is a good bet, I think. And of course, Sentry and Render also think so. That's why they are partners. It's going to really turn out really, really well. And apart from that, I have TKYT sponsorship. TKYT is my show, Teach Kevin Your Thing on YouTube, where I get people to come teach me what they built or they're working on for like an hour. that also gets sponsorship. In fact, when I decided not to do 9 to 5, that kept the light on for like months before Project 50 kicked in. So it's more of like subscription to my products, TKYT sponsorships, and whatever way Project 50 is going to bring income streams. Yeah.
That's cool.
What's up, friends and party people? I'm talking to you today about our friends over at Clerk, the complete suite of embeddable UIs, the full-on most comprehensive user management platform. If you're using React or Next.js, Clerk is perfect for you. Embeddable UIs, flexible APIs, and admin dashboards to authenticate and manage your users. And I'm here with Clerk CEO Colin Sidoti. Colin, give me the backstory. Why does Clerk exist?
When we started Clerk, we were definitely frustrated that a lot of the authentication solutions, both services or open source, kind of didn't have a good UI built in. And we would look at Google's sign-in experience and Google's user profile, and it just had this like degree of polish and professionalism to it. It just didn't come out of the box with everything else. Usually you start with just email, password as the sign-in options, and then you kind of have to add in extra modules to get OAuth on, and you know, in the user profile, having a profile picture and setting up 2FA, right? It's like all this extra work that you have to do. And with Clerk, I think we really were inspired by Stripe Checkout, where here's a checkout and it's great, right? Like, and we had this question of why didn't that exist for auth really? And so for Clerk, you drop in our components and it's really just a complete like end-to-end experience right out of the box with that high degree of polish, high degree of professionalism that I think users have really come to expect these days.
Okay, so easy to drop in components. Really beautiful UI, by the way. I love it. Very nice. Clerk must be the most welcomed easy button when it comes to authentication, good UI, and all that, right?
One of the most striking things, you know, still to this day, I think Clerk might be the only auth solution that comes with a user profile screen. And it's so insane to think about because you need the user profile screen because that's where the user goes and they self-serve to set up 2FA. And it ties back into the sign-in. And so it's like, we had to do that to be able to offer that experience. But it's so bizarre to us. Auth depends so much on user profile, yet most auth solutions don't include it. And it's just this weird, bizarre thing that never made sense to us. And so approaching it from first principles, we have it out of the box.
Very cool. So pixel perfect UIs embedded in minutes, React or Next.js. This is the easy button for you. Clerk is perfect for you. It is a full-on comprehensive user management platform with, as I said, beautiful UI. Best of all, they have pricing that scales with you. They have a phenomenal free tier, 10,000 monthly active users for free. Plus, when you scale to a paid plan, they have first day free. This means you won't be charged for users who sign up and never return. So that's phenomenal. Every feature you need now and as you scale, get started at clerk.com. That's clerk.com. Once again, clerk.com.
So Project 50, mm-hmm. You've been working on it, but it's not out yet. You said it comes out in July, so you're not going to talk about what it is.
Yes.
But it's in partnership with Sentry and Render. Is that what you said?
Yes.
How did that come together? That seems like a motley crew of people.
Yeah. So I got the idea for the project. And first of all, I use Render, right? So that means I have like, you know, they know that I use them. I talk about them everywhere. So when I got the idea for Project 50 and found a way for them to partner, I reached out to them, made an offer. And the same thing I did for Sentry. I even have another partner on BoardBase. I don't know if you know them. They're like security infrastructure or like making sure all your secrets are secure and all whatnot. But they are the third partners, right? They may or may not be two other partners, which I will announce, may or may not announce later on. But I was just it. I told them the vision of the project, what it's going to be about. And my partners are subsidizing what I was supposed to charge for the project.
Cool.
Yeah.
How did you pitch that to them? Like, hey, I got an idea. It's going to make money. It's going to be awesome. You should sponsor me to build this. I mean, I think a lot of people would love to have that set up, but you've got it. How'd you get it?
Yeah, I don't. Let's just say, first of all, I never knew they would go for it. Okay, I wanted them to go for it, but it was so novel. There was nothing to, it's premium vaporware because there's nothing to pay for, right? But I have a sizable reputation online. Right? So I think my work already kind of spoke for me in terms of, okay, you could trust this person, right? And then I was like, so I was banking on that. And of course, I want Project 50 to be successful because it's going to be one of my biggest income stream if it works. So I gave them the pitch. The offer was, I think, for them to go for it, it was too good. They couldn't say no because they don't have any, probably don't have too much of a downside because it's going to be like more marketing for them. And the way I'm going to, you know, the way the partnership works, perpetually, it's a good marketing spend. All right. So that was just it. I just threw a hole in Mary, I guess. And the universe caught it.
Yeah.
This way. Yeah.
Well, there's an old saying that says you have not because you ask not. And it sounds like you have because you asked.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm excited. I mean, you've got me intrigued. I want to know what Project 50 is. I want you to come back in July and let me know.
Yes.
Because this is very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. But this is too exciting. We need to get more boring. Let's go back to boring JavaScript stack.
Okay.
Give people the sales pitch for Sales.js because you're all in on this and you love it. I heard the very little magic part, but why would somebody else maybe consider using Sales as the basis for their web app?
Yeah, for sure. So primarily, good software, good technologies stay in the background and just let you be awesome. So what Sales have been able to do for me is to stay in the background and let me just focus on my business logic. With technologies today, with the other competitors out there, I know it's a lot of pain because I've seen people move from the other way to the boring stack. You know, like just the other day I was onboarding someone from like Next to the boring stack because it's just, it works. Like what I've been hearing from anyone who uses it is that it's predictable. And that's what good software is to me because our life's already hard when we have to solve these different problems in our business domain. You don't want to be solving frameworks problems because the framework is supposed to make your life easy. So when you have to fight the framework and the mental model don't work for you, you have to always guess if it's going to work. That don't work for me. So Sales is just boring. Like anytime I'm writing Sales, I'm writing JavaScript and it's just behind. I'm not even thinking which part is Sales, which part is not Sales. It's all JavaScript. So for the longest time I've worked with Sales, it has made me a better JavaScript developer. All right. So if you want a robust MVC framework that will let you build full stack apps, you definitely have to use Sales for your backend, right? And with the way the boring stack is set up, if you want to build full stack application, it's a no-brainer because with the boring stack, you are 90% of the time in Vue, React, or Svelte, which is where most people want to be, like your UI. Then for your backend, all you are doing is sending queries, doing backend business logic, your auth is taken care of, your authorization and authentication are all in the backend. It's just, in fact, except you are being paid by the hour, you don't have any reason to not use Sales because it's just going to let you not spend the whole time you spend debugging framework stuff. It's just stable.
Love it. Love it. Unless you get paid by the hour, in which case maybe you want to go slow. You know, if you want to go fast, go boring.
Yeah.
Go Sales. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very good sales pitch. I'll stop now with my puns. But let's break down the boring stack again. You mentioned at the top, let's go piece by piece. So you start with Sales and then you add Inertia, which you mentioned a little bit. Then there's Tailwind and then you kind of pick your front end framework or Vue library, Vue, React, Svelte, etc. Can you talk through each component? We've covered Sales, but Inertia, how it works, what part does it bring to the stack and why do you think it's boring enough for your boring stack?
Yeah, for sure. So Inertia is more like a protocol. In fact, you wouldn't even notice it's there. So it's like swapping your routing, your React router, your Vue router with Inertia, right? So it uses HTTP with a lot of headers. In fact, you can really implement an adapter for both the backend and the frontend, but there's already adapters for the front ends, right? So I had to build an adapter for Sales, which worked really, really well. So it's a tiny layer that lets you, so when you click a link, like an initial link, right? Normally it's supposed to like, you know, be a full page request and refresh and stuff. So when you click the link, initially we hijack that click, for example, and make an Ajax request to the backend. The backend already understands how to interpret this. So when it sees that, okay, whoa, this is an initial request, it's going to send the name of the component, which is the page you're navigating to. Right? So it's that layer that glues the backend and the frontend in one code base that makes it redundant to have like a separate client-side routing and a separate server-side routing. Yeah, it is just mind-blowing. It's a simple tech. It is so boring because in the Laravel world, there's this talk of, okay, should we use Inertia or Livewire? It's not an apples-to-apples comparison because Inertia is just boring. It is... anyone could write the backend adapter. It's that simple, right? But all it asks is this glue that, okay, let me have my SP experience, but let my server side controls all the business logic. So when you need a page, it's going to send the name of the component of the page and also the data the page needs as props, which is brilliant use of the prop interface. So anytime the page loads, it loads with the data. So no more loading spinners, that's all gone. No more flash of unstyled or unauthenticated content because, like I've always said in examples, you visit this website where you're logged in, right? But because it is everything is done client-side, you see the sign-in and login or sign-up button. Even though you're logging, then for like 2 seconds before the JavaScript kicks in, you then see that, oh, this is my avatar, right? But with Inertia, you don't see that because the page is authenticated in the server side. So it's always going to come in the state as it's supposed to be. It's just mind-blowing and simple.
That's very cool. I had not heard of Inertia JS. So this is built for Laravel in the PHP world, but it's generic, and so you can basically adapt it to sales, which is what you have done for your boring stack, right?
Mm-hmm. That's what I've done.
Love it. Love it. Okay, you picked Tailwind as well. We talk about Tailwind a lot, so not so much that's new there, probably for me and for the listener, but maybe why did you pick Tailwind? And is this the kind of thing that you could maybe ignore or swap out if you don't want that particular aspect of the stack?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. So if you really want to build a stable web application, you don't want the gymnastics of maintaining CSS. Because when I started using Tailwind, I was like, where has this been all my life? First of all, I hated it because what is this monstrosity with all the claim classes? Mm-hmm. But when you get in the flow and the groove, you'll be like, this should be the way we build websites, like styling, right? So I picked it because it was just stable. Like once, so the stack comes with Tailwind already set up, just go put them classes in there and you're all going. So you don't have to maintain a .css file or do less or sass or whatever you want to do or CSS in JS. But the cool thing is, if you don't want that, everything in the stack, except for sales, is swappable. So if you don't want Vue, use React or Svelte. If you don't want Tailwind, you do whatever you want for your styling. Right? But by default, we have opinion. I have opinion on how you style CSS because, like I said, except you're being paid by the hour, like, why wouldn't you use Tailwind and just move fast? Because it's just literally classes and most people like it. So most people that are like me that like Tailwind would definitely feel right at home with the stack out of the box. But you can swap it if you want because the code is all yours anyways.
Are there any open source, boring stack web apps that people can go read through and see exactly how one works?
For sure. So the way the boring stack work is that I provide templates. So for now we have the Melo template. So because unlike most frameworks, I don't feel that when someone scaffold a project in JavaScript land, we see a counter. I don't think that's very good use of our time because in other ecosystem, you get like a full blown authentication, like authenticated app, you have models in there and everything. So we have templates in the boring stack. So when you want NPS create sales, the project name, then --React or --Vue, you will see, you will get a full template of, so if you choose Vue for today, the Vue template is more up to date. React, I'm still yet to get to like, you know, but you get like a React based boring stack app, but you won't get the auth yet until I work on it. So, but if let's assume you're using Vue, you get authentication, authorization, and also OAuth with Google. All right. So if you want to look at the app right now, you just look at the Melo Vue template. which is on the borrowing stack repo. So that would be github.com/salescachehq/borrowing stack, then templates. Then you see all the templates. They're all real cool that you could read and really understand how the stack works.
What about deploying a borrowing stack app? What does that look like?
Oh, it is anywhere you could run nodeapp.js. Literally, you could deploy it there. So I have people deploying on VPSs. I personally deploy on Render. So the docs you see, Render, deploy. So I want to work on more. So anywhere you could run nodeapp.js, literally, I am not even kidding. You could deploy the borrowing stack app. So I'm thinking that's almost like every hosting provider out there that supports Node.js. So wherever you want to deploy, it's so simple. So it's like, because Sales is that simple, there's no much orchestration needed. Just nodeapp.js, your app is live in wherever you're deploying.
What about backend, like database, connections, etc.?
Yeah, thank you. I love that. So in the borrowing stack, we use Sales, of course. And Sales has an ORM waterline, which is superb. I don't know why we don't talk about it enough. So it's a first party ORM in Sales, which lets you connect to any database you want. MongoDB, Postgres, MySQL. I'm working on a SQLite adapter, which I'm going to reveal at SalesConf anyways, next month. So for database, in fact, one cool thing is if you scaffold a new borrowing stack app, Sales is very pragmatic because we don't have an opinion on what database you should use. I think databases are too personal to be like, okay, in this stack we use SQLite or in that stack we use Postgres. No. You cannot decide the data need of a project. So because of the way Waterline is, you could easily start a borrowing stack app and don't worry about the database until you have to. So we ship with something called Sales Disk, which will act like this development only database layer. You use your Waterline query as default, so you could use user.find or user.create or whatever. Then when it comes time for you to like have real production data, you just have to change one config, give it the database adapter and the URL of your database, and all your query stays the same, and Bob's your uncle. You just go. And one cool thing I like is you could have different models use different database in one Sales app. I haven't had to do that. I had to do that just once in a client's project. But if that's what you want, okay, maybe my users table, let it be on Postgres. My orders table should be on MongoDB for whatever reason. Sales is that flexible. It can handle it. It's just beautiful to see.
This is a Changelog news break. YouTuber Internet of Bugs posted a lengthy breakdown exposing Devin's creators, Cognition Labs, for falsifying claims about their world's first AI software engineer. Devin was pitched as a fully autonomous software developer, and one of the more impressive demos showed it completing and getting paid for freelance jobs on Upwork. Sound too good to be true? It did to Internet of Bugs, who says, quote, "I broke down the Devin Upwork video frame by frame, and here I show what Devin was supposed to do, what it actually managed to do instead, and how bad a job of that it did. On the whole, that's not surprising given the current state of generative AI, and I wouldn't be bothering to debunk it except, one, the company lied about what Devin could do in the video description, and two, a lot of people uncritically parroted the lie all over the internet, and three, that caused a lot of non-technical people to believe that AI might replace programmers soon," end quote. Devin really did garner a lot of attention, also known as money, because of that demo. We talked about it on our shows with a healthy amount of skepticism, I think, but I'm thankful their claims have been debunked, and I hope we all give Cognition Labs the side eye from here on out. Exaggerating your development capabilities? Maybe Devin really is human after all. You just heard one of our five top stories from Monday's Changelog News. Subscribe to the podcast to get all of the week's top stories and pop your email address in at changelog.com/news to also receive our free companion email with even more developer news worth your attention. Once again, that's changelog.com/news. Why do you think Sales isn't more popular than it is? Like, why do you think that people don't use it all that often?
So, two things. One, I think it's more of like a marketing thing, right? So, in tech Twitter, in the tech space, it's all about the loudest, all about the, you know, who's going to more conferences and all that. Mike McNeil currently is the CEO of Fleet Device Management. So definitely he has his hands filled with working there, right? And being the CEO, right? So that's why I come in. So for the longest time, Mike, definitely not interested in the whole what's shining or popular, but I'm interested in because I think the project deserves all the flowers, right? So the reason why it's not that popular, probably because I haven't stepped in the scene for a while, because like I said, Mike is just, Mike know the, so anytime we speak, he always say like, you know, sales is the only way it can build full stack JavaScript application. And he's not the only one who thinks so. Like I said, there are lots of companies. In fact, just the other day, I found out a Nigerian company who is using sales. They are doing up to 72 billion naira in terms of transaction. They are like a fintech company per month using this boring stuff. And they just casually told me about it. And they said that they wouldn't have moved faster if it wasn't for sales. But like, oh, really? So it's all about shiny. It's all about to know who's the loudest out there. So that's why I'm coming to help it. Because I think that's the only missing piece to like talk about it and get more people excited about it. And and really get the word out there because the tech is too good. And one thing that always blows my mind, we are at 1.x in sales. And I could tell you for free that we are feature parity with any other framework out there. And I'm not even kidding. But we're still at 1.x. To tell you how stable, because stability is at the core of sales. Stability is what Mike wanted. So at 1.x, just think about what will happen if we're at 2, at 3, at 4. Whew, I actually dream of those days. So
I can tell you are very into this. You do a good job of being an advocate for both sales and for this combination of tooling. Where do you see this going? I mean, if you cast forward your efforts now, go a year, 2 years, 5 years down the road, what do you see in the boring stack and sales future?
So I see more adoption because I am very entrepreneurial. In fact, I have something called the African Indie Hackers project I'm working on, which is encouraging more people to build products on the web and, you know, get paid for it. So I get to see more people, more indie hackers using sales and the boring stack because it's just a no-brainer because I've seen it both ways. So even, and more enterprise companies using sales because especially the boring stack and of course sales if you just want backend. So I see more people knowing about it and more people picking it up as a no-brainer and as a very modern replacement for the Mern stack or, you know, MongoDB Express, React. So anyone using Express or the Mern stack have no reason not to use the boring stack. And from what I've seen, more people that are tired of the complexity of modern web dev from things like Next.js will be coming to sell. Because like I said, people are already coming. Like I had someone who was building their first product. They were working with Next.js. They were so frustrated. They hit me up like, dude, I got to try the boring stack. They set it up in a day. Everything they've been building on in Next.js, they set it up in a day. And it was a night and day difference for them. And they loved it so much. So I get to see people who want simplicity. Because I like to code, but I don't want to spend hours coding. You know, I just want to do work for like an hour and I get my stuff done. And I'm gone. It's because work should enable me leave as soon as possible. So my tools should not keep me on my desk for hours just because I'm debugging something specific to the framework. So it's going to be very much more adopted. And what I want, this is my opinion, is I don't want people building demo apps to use the boring stack. I want people shipping businesses. So agencies that want to ship for their clients, businesses that are, you know, they're building SaaS, freelancers, and anyone that just want to ship stuff. Like, you don't really care about the shiny, you just want to ship stuff. Yeah, I see them using sales and loving it because I love it.
Well, I think if people try it out, they may love it as well. Mm-hmm. What's the best way to get started with this project?
Yeah, so quickly, if you get your hands dirty, if you're like me, you want to see something on your screen really quickly, you just want MPX create sales. Give it the, or just on MPS create sales, you could also pick the project name and the whether view React or Svelte, right? You could pick those. So on MPS create dash sales, and that's all. And you can get started. You could also look at the docs. So docs.salesguys.com, because I work on a ton of open source projects. So we have this unified docs at the Sales Guys company. So go to docs.salesguys.com/boringstack. Then you get to see the docs, our nice little mascot. So fun fact, the mascot is a manatee, which are the gentle cows of the sea, if you will. Very slow, very boring. So that's why we picked that mascot. So we are taking this boring thing really seriously, if you haven't noticed.
Not to be confused with a hippopotamus, which is also in the water, but not boring at all, right? Mm-hmm. Very dangerous hippos.
Yes, yeah.
Good choice, manatee. Manatees are awesome. That's a great...
Yeah.
How'd you get that artwork? Did you have Dolly draw it for you, or did you have a human draw it for you?
Yeah, I have this designer who's been working with me for like 3-4 years now. She does all the logos. She's so good. So she did that.
Cool. Very cool. The boring JavaScript stack. Kelvin, this is all really interesting stuff. I like how exciting you make the boring things. I do also think that choosing boring technologies serves people well most of the time. And we do find ourselves chasing yet another shiny object too often. In fact, around here at JS Party, we're often covering the new frameworks. And most of the time I say no, because we've covered so many frameworks. And in fact, when I first heard from you, I was like, I don't know, another stack. Should we talk about yet another stack? But I'm like, well, this one has a little bit different view of the world. It's trying to be maybe your last stack that you need for your business. Because if you pick these tried and true tech, you won't have to find yourself upgrading, refactoring, rewriting, and migrating to another stack, you know, 6 months, 12 months, 3 years from now. Very cool, Kelvin. Well, what's the best way to connect with you and to connect with the Boring Stack and say hi out there online?
Yeah, for sure. So I am most active, kind of like very notorious on X, Twitter. So you could find me at Dominus_Kelvin. And also you could, you know, check out the docs, because I think the docs are quite good. They're not perfect, because there's still so much to add from the perspective of new people coming into the stack. So check out the docs. No, let me know how you hate it and how you like it, because I always want to make it better. Then you could also look forward to SalesConf Africa, because I am giving a workshop migrating from Mern to the Boring Stack. It's by May 17th, so it's going to be live streamed, so anyone can watch it from wherever they are in the world. So it's going to be like this hands-on thing, because people are going to ask questions in real time. If you have any questions online too, could also bring it. So those are like the ways. So first of all, just Twitter. Then also you could join the Salescast community Discord, so you could ask questions. So salescast.com/chat will redirect you to the Discord invite. Then you come in and bring in a question. I like to see fresh perspective, because I've been using this for like 6-7 years, so I definitely have bias to whether it's easy or not. So bring your perspective. I would love to hear them.
Very good. Well, Kelvin, send us all the links to all those things you mentioned. I'll make sure that everything gets into the show notes so that our listener can click through and connect the easy way. Well, that is our show for this week. Thank you for listening to the JS Party. On behalf of Kelvin Omerishone and the Boring JS Stack and Hagfish and Salescasts, all the things, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you on the next one. That is JS Party for this week. Thanks for hanging with us. We would love to get more awesome reviews for the pod into Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So, for a limited time only, you leave us a thoughtful 5-star review, send the evidence to jsparty@changelog.com, and we'll send you a free pack of Changelog stickers right to your door. Let's do this. Thanks once again to our partners at fly.io, to our Beat Freak in Residence, Breakmaster Cylinder, and to our friends at Sentry. We love Sentry and have been using it for years. If and when it's time for you to check it out, use code CHANGELOG. That helps us, because Sentry knows we're making an impact on their business, and it helps you, because they'll give you $100 off the team plan. Once again, use code CHANGELOG, all one word. That's all for now, but come on back and party with us again next week.